Great. Do you guys want to make yourselves comfortable? Find a seat. Amazing. Bless you. So good to worship together. Do you know what I'd love to do before we even start the next bit? I worked out earlier, this is my first time at Letton, but I worked out, I must have been on, I think, probably over 100 residentials or weeks like this. Over 100 in my life, I think. Certainly around 100. And I realised that often, having been on all of those, it's about this time where the leaders start to get really tired. Because often the leaders have had a long day packing bags and getting ready and carrying you guys in your heart. And so, like, getting you onto the coach and sorting out Letton. And so there's always that moment where leaders get just exhausted and want to just take a deep breath. So I want to give permission to the leaders to just take a deep breath for a second. Just relax. You did it. You got everyone here. You can now just enjoy just chilling out this evening. And for these guys that have given up and sacrificed, some have left their family at home, some have given up loads of things, some have volunteered to be here. I think that's real evidence of how much they respect you, how much they love you, how much they do anything to get you guys here to be in the presence of God. So your leaders are like big brothers and sisters. Some of them are like big, like granddads and grandmas. Do you know what I mean? That's good as well. And so just before, you know, it's traditional to say thank you to the leaders at the end. Why don't you just for a moment, just turn face leaders and mouth the word thank you to them, or give them a little high five, or pat them on the back, or just say thank you for even getting us here. Because leaders, you've done an awesome job, and it must be exhausted. So you could just relax now and take a deep breath, but thank you so much for your hard work. Maybe just while I'm talking, you might want to even write in your journal the names of one or two leaders that you're going to pray for while you're here. So it's not just down to the leaders to pray for you and look after you. It's down to you guys to look after your big brothers and sisters. It's up to you to write your name down, maybe two names, of leaders that you want to bless, leaders that you want to look after, that you're going to pray for just while you're here. Just think about those leaders in your groups, the leaders that have done so much to get you here. So anyway, there you go. So, into the wild. Our theme for the next 4 days. Where do we start? Could I just start by telling you a little bit about how I became a Christian? Is that okay? So I was 14 years old. Put your hands up if you're 14 at the moment. Wow, quite a few of you. Okay, put your hands down. I was 14 years old and I went on a holiday just like this. There was youth groups from all over the country came together. And I remember really clearly being so nervous because I was really shy. I mean, I'm reasonably shy now, but actually I was really shy back then. Like really, really kind of quiet. As a lad, I was really quiet. And I got to this residential and there was like hundreds and hundreds of people, and it was just two big places to sleep, a boys' dorm and a girls' dorm. And the boys' dorm just had like rows and rows and rows of bunk beds. And of course, you can imagine the noise at night was going to be incredible as people chatted until the early hours of the morning. And in that first afternoon, after we'd stuck our bags onto our beds and kind of gone out to, I think we did a wide game actually quite early on and just had a kick around. And then there was that moment where we started to start to talk to the people we didn't know. And I started to talk to some guys from Harrogate up near Leeds. And there was like a couple of quite cool lads that are really into football, and I got on really well with them. And I noticed that one of their friends, whose name was Sharon, was so fit. It was unbelievable. Like, I just so fancied her straight away. I'm not a big believer in love at first sight, but I just instantly thought, you are just really pretty. And thing is, I just thought, wow, I'm just not going to stand a chance with you, particularly because I was so shy. I thought, well, how do I even start to talk? So I tried later on doing a few table tennis skills. That didn't really work. She didn't pay any attention to that whatsoever. Then the zip wire got stuck later that afternoon. It like got tangled up. So I jumped up onto the zip wire and kind of went like this all the way down and untangled it and then jumped down to the floor. She wasn't even watching. I thought that was quite a heroic thing to do. But by the way, it's like a mini zip wire. So I probably could have just like reached up and done it. But anyway, it was really not going very well at all. And then I came up with a plan of how to capture Sharon Taylor's attention. And this is a true story. I thought she would be really flattered if she knew that I'd been like kind of like thinking about her and dreaming about her. And so here was my plan. So I went to bed that night as normal, and then everyone was chatting in the bunk beds, and two of the lads that were in her group, her youth group from Harrogate, two of the lads were in the bunk beds really, really near me. They were like directly opposite. So I thought, right, here we go. show. And you know that bit when you're like, the last couple of people are like murmuring and chatting before you go to sleep. So like, after the leaders have been in and shouted at you like 20 times, eventually there's that last couple of annoying people still whispering. Just as they were starting to like kind of die down, I timed it perfectly. I pretended to sleep talk. So this is what I did. So her name is Sharon. So I just pretended, I did a little bit of like subtle snoring. I went, and then I went, Sharon Taylor. Sharon. I didn't do too much. It was like subtle. I didn't want to overdo it. And I just did it two or three times. And like, I could hear them giggling. And the next morning, they like probably ran up to her at breakfast to tell her, Sharon, there's this guy called Chad in the bed near us. He's been dreaming about you. He was like saying your name in the sleep. And then she got really flattered. And she came up to me later that day and asked me out. Isn't that cool? Isn't that amazing? It's a true story. It's a true story. She loved it. Oh, by the way, Definitely don't try that tonight, by the way. So, now here's the thing. We went out for 17 months. Isn't that amazing? 17 months. And we wrote to each other all the time. 17 month relationship, then we broke it off. But the problem was, during those 17 months, we didn't actually see each other once. That's why it lasted so long. And then I must have got like really ugly during those 17 months, because I got the coach up on New Year's Eve to see her. The big like moment to see each other after writing letters. And she was like, well, maybe we just be friends. And I was like, oh no, don't give me the friend thing. And we just became friends. And on New Year's Eve, she went out to a party and left me at her house on my own. Isn't that the saddest thing, having just been dumped on New Year's Eve? There you go. So that's the worst relationship story ever. But here's, hang on, that was night one was the kind of Sharon Taylor story. Now night two, it was a Christian residential, and they'd been talking about Jesus dying on the cross and coming back to life. I'd heard that over and over again, but something kind of clicked in my heart and in my head, and everything seemed to connect. And night two, as I lay in the same bunk, like kind of bed, I lied there, and this time I didn't do any fake sleep talking, and I just started praying. Now, I'd usually pray. In fact, I'd prayed as a kind of like 8, 9, 10 year old, I remember praying over and over again and imagining the words would like float out of the window into the darkness. So I'd pray for my family and imagine the words would float out of the window. Never really knew where those words went. It was just kind of comforting to say a little prayer as a child. But then all of a sudden, as a 14-year-old lying in that bed, I said a prayer, and I remember praying for my friends and my family. And I thought, oh, wow. Oh, the Lord's actually listening. Those words aren't floating into the darkness. He's actually listening to me right now. He could hear what I'm saying. He's real. And so then I thought, so hang on, I need to be quite careful what I say here, because he's actually listening. So I started to say, well, Jesus, I'd like to be a Christian. And it's really obvious, and I think I kind of am, but I'd like to tell you, I'd like to be a Christian. I want to know the God that made the whole universe, and the God that made the whole universe is listening to me right now. And that moment changed my life forever. And so whilst night one, silly story, 17-month relationship, all went wrong, all forgotten about, night two, simple prayer, changed my life forever. Started an amazing adventure. So that means tonight, I don't know whether you guys pray regularly or not, or maybe you've never prayed at all, or maybe you've never had that moment of thinking God's listening. Maybe tonight, before you go to bed, just quietly, just when it's all gone quiet, Just talk to the Lord and know he is listening to you. And if you've never become a Christian, maybe that's your moment where you say to the Lord, just quietly, actually, I want to know you, that you are real. I want you to be my friend. I want you to be in my life. And so if you do that tonight, come and tell us tomorrow. Tell one of your leaders tomorrow. We'd love that to be. That might be the moment where you first become a Christian. Anyway, that's how I became a Christian and started the most incredible journey with Jesus. Like, I am quite quiet and shy. It's just worth you guys knowing that. And so I'm going to be like super honest with you over the next 4 days. And even though I stand at the front and I've got a mic and I look confident, don't believe that. It's not always the case. I'm quite quiet and quite shy. Actually, we talked about the leaders' sacrifices. My family are on holiday. My twins, little boy and girl called Jack and Emily, they're 2 years old. And they're on the beach in Devon with my wife at the moment, because they had a chance to go on a free holiday in Devon. And so I thought, wow, kind of want to be down there with them, and I struggle with this kind of thing, and I don't know you, and where do I want to be? I want to be here. Because I believe that Jesus is going to do something quite incredible over the next 4 days. That will have a massive ripple effect, not just in your life, but many, many hundreds and thousands of people, all as a result of what we're going to do here over the next 4 days. So even though I'd love to be with my wife and children, don't get me wrong, of course I would. I want to be right here, despite my shyness. This is really important stuff. And I want us to start a bit of an adventure. And I'm quite adventurous, actually. I love that. Like, I remember, like, some of the adventurous things I've done. I was thinking, I've tracked wolves' prints in the snow in Transylvanian mountains on my own. That's pretty wild, isn't it? I love that. I love any kind of adventure or risk. I've slept out in the snow before, just in a bivy bag. You know, no tent or anything. Just sleeping out under the stars. Done it loads of times. In, like, -6, I think, was the coldest. Just love being out under the stars. And I've been mud wrestling before. There's a group of us just decided, let's go mud wrestling. I love any kind of adventure, any kind of risk. But the adventure, the risk of living a life for Jesus beats anything, beats anything. Honestly, that adventure you're going to go on with Jesus is just incredible. And it can be daily. You know, the other day, me and my little boy Jack, we're walking down the high street in my little town near where I live, and we were going very slowly because he's only just started to learn to walk, and so we were tottering along, and I remember seeing this guy sitting on a park bench. I don't know whether he was homeless or not, but he suddenly looked like so kind of dishevelled and was mumbling and shaking. He had a very long beard, long scraggy hair, and he'd been dribbling so much that the dribble had gone and like all the way down his beard and was just dripping off the end, like, consistently. It was horrible. He looked such a mess. And I felt so sorry for him. My little boy and I walked past. And I thought, hang on, what am I doing? Let's just go and chat to him. Now, I'm not suggesting you wander up to strangers. But I am suggesting you take risks in your faith, maybe in your school playground sometimes. So my little boy and I walked backwards very, very slowly and sat next to him. And I tried my best to say some good things and say some things that would like help him to kind of understand that I was a Christian. But he just carried on mumbling, didn't even look at me. He was like just not with it at all. So I thought, there's nothing I can say right now that's going to help this guy to connect with me. And then I thought, I wonder when the last time he held a little child's hand was. Because who's going to let a homeless guy on a park bench that's mumbling and shaking and dribbling, who's going to say, oh yeah, like, hold my kid's hand? It's just not going to happen, is it? I thought, I wonder, in his past, maybe he'd been a dad. Maybe he's a granddad, I don't know. Maybe he's held a child's hand before, most people have. So I said to my little boy, Jack, will you give this man a high five? And I said to the guy, is that okay? Can my son give you a high five? And my little boy just held his tiny hand up. Now, he was born very prematurely, so he weighed 1.3 pounds when he was born. Maybe tell you that story another time, but he was tiny, so his hand is still tiny. And this guy's hand was massive and big and gnarled and warm. And my little boy just held his tiny hand, and they just held hands for a while. No words. And then the guy had a massive smile on his face and just started crying. And there was no words. Just me and this guy and my boy. Me and my boy, like, just doing some mission together for the first time. And this guy just cried and smiled. I still have no idea what was going on for that man. Like, what emotion that evoked in him. What it reminded him of. But certainly there's a moment, like a touch of God in my little boy and this old man on a bench. So that adventure beats anything. That beats tracing wolves in the snow in Transylvanian mountains. Do you know what I mean? That moment where an old man's life in just in a tiny way is transformed. So over these next 4 days, let's start a bit of an adventure, which means I wonder where Jesus is going to take you. I wonder kind of what little bits and pieces he's got in store for you. Little insignificant moments that become significant. Ordinary moments that become extraordinary. And you might think, I can't do it. And that's just the kind of license you need to be able to do it. Because in the Bible, every time someone says to Jesus, I can't do it, he then often uses them to do amazing things. So if you're sitting there thinking, I'm not even sure I can do this. I'm not confident. I'm not skilled. I'm not cool. I'm not... Actually, maybe I think Jesus is going to call some of you that you're not expecting to do some amazing things. Now, what should we do? Just so you know, I tend to go off at tangents. You'll probably be used to that already. So we'll do some, I think the Lord's got some specific passages in the Bible for us to look at, but also we'll do some creative stuff. And so do come back to me and ask me questions, and we might be able to go along kind of an agenda or theme that you want to discuss more than the things I've written down. I'm so up for that. What I'd like to do, we're going to look at a book of the Bible that's not looked at very often. Should we find it now? Like, it's Philemon. Philemon? Okay, great. Right. So if I said we were reading Genesis or Acts or Romans or Matthew or John, you'd be like, oh yeah, we know about loaves and fishes and Jesus walking on water and Noah's Ark and all that kind of stuff. Who knows loads about Philemon? Let's hear. Woo! No. Okay, right. Okay. So Philemon, it's kind of like there's Timothy and Titus in the New Testament. So we're right towards the back, before Revelation, before Hebrews, so just before Hebrews. So kind of flick through, use the front of your Bible. It'll tell you exactly which page it is. So right towards the back, after Timothy, after Titus, before Revelation, before Hebrews. Find Philemon. It is tiny. It's tiny. It's just one page. That's it. That's it. That's it.
Sorry. Pardon?
Yeah, that's it. That's right. So P-H-I-L. That's it. Okay. Well done. Amazing. Okay, if you haven't got it, that's fine, because we're going to watch a video in a moment, and you'll have a chance while the video's on just to flick through and have a look. Now, so we need a starting place in the Word of God, and we're going to start in an odd place. We're going to start in an odd place. We're going to start with a runaway slave called Onesimus. Onesimus, so I'll explain that in a moment. Just so you can pick up the theme of Philemon, we're going to watch a video about a murderer in America. Okay, it's not exactly the same as Philemon, but it'll give you the kind of sense of the theology, the theme that's going to underpin what we're just about to do. So, are you guys ready with the video? Is now a good time just to... No, that's okay. All right, okay. That's fine. I'm happy to just like do a little dance or something. I'd love that. Okay, so, I'm happy to do the Philemon stuff first, if that's preferable. What do you reckon? Let me tell you about Onesimus. Do you lads mind grabbing that whiteboard for me? Is that okay? And like propping it up somewhere against here just while we're getting the video. Are you ready? Oh wow. Okay. What do you reckon, Matt? Are you ready? This is a really interesting little clip I found about a guy talking. He's a murderer from America that's talking about what he's done, basically. And then this might help us to kind of like zone in on what we're just about to do in Philemon. What do you reckon? You guys ready? Okay, let's watch the video. It's a really interesting clip, isn't it? Like really powerful. Like that guy, so murdered like a parent and daughter and it was the grandma or the mum that then like taught him love. And Agnes, it doesn't say in the clip, but Agnes was a really strong Christian. She had a really strong faith. And she wanted this guy to understand Jesus' grace, even though he definitely didn't deserve it. And we're going to look at a similar kind of level of grace now in this book. And we're going to purposely study a book that's a little bit different. And I don't know how many of you have read it before, but it's quite an interesting story. So I might just draw the main characters for you to help you understand who we're going to look at. So I just need to put this in here. Okay, you guys might need to swing around so you can see. Here we go. So we're going to come across three main characters, and I just want to take you through the three so you can see the way they interact and relate to each other. So first of all, there is a guy called Paul that many of you will know about. Paul was a Christian, and we're going to look at Paul more tomorrow. So by the way, my art is dreadful, but this can be Paul. Okay, and apparently he was bald like me. By the way, some people think I'm like a bald Decker, for those of you that know Decker. Don't call me bald Decker. That's like the worst nickname ever. Anyway, so if you don't know Decker, he's just like me, but hairy. And so this is Paul. This is Paul. And Paul's a quite incredible guy. We'll look more at Paul tomorrow, but you just need to know he's just an incredible Christian. Then there's a guy called Philemon. And Philemon was like an estate owner that would have had loads and loads of slaves working for him. And of course, when we say slaves, we have to understand the culture was, there was something like, I think in the Roman Empire, there were 60 million slaves. So I'm not saying slavery is right, I'm just saying in this culture it was just normal. So Philemon was a Christian. In fact, Paul had helped Philemon to become a Christian. But the thing is, Philemon is incredibly angry. Okay, so Paul and Philemon. So Paul helps Philemon to become a Christian, but even though he's a Christian, he would have been extremely angry because of the third guy we're going to look at, and that is Onesimus. You'll see it written later on, so it's O-N-E-S something or other. And so Onesimus is a really interesting guy. He was a slave. How should we do him? Okay. Okay, now Onesimus is an interesting character, and we'll read in a minute. That he was in a huge amount of trouble because he's a slave in Philemon's house. And Onesimus basically had stolen from Onesimus. So it's really interesting because even though Philemon was a Christian, basically he's now got to work out whether he forgives Onesimus or not. And Onesimus, we don't know what he'd stolen or quite what he'd done, but certainly he'd let his master down badly. But the thing is, this guy here goes on the run because he knows the implication isn't that he'd just get told off or like kind of put in prison, but he just probably would have been killed. Because the thing is, there's 60 million Onesimuses, 60 million slaves. Now, if Philemon lets this guy get away with it, then there might end up being some kind of rebellion or revolution amongst the 60 million slaves in the Roman Empire who think, oh, if he can get away with it, we can get away with it. So the chances are he would have been killed just to make an example of him. So then he thinks, well, if I'm going to get killed, I may as well leg it. So he runs to Rome and tries to like hide in the streets and the dark alleys of Rome. If you can imagine like horrible kind of like ghetto style Rome, really dark alleys, that this guy here, having stolen, just runs away and hides in the dark alleys and was just about destined to spend the rest of his life hiding in dark shadows, looking out the corner of his eye, trying to check whether he's been spotted and noticed. So he is terrified, even though he's a Christian. Now, just as we start that bit, even now, because we'll maybe do some of this in the worship later on, in what ways are you like a runaway slave? Which bits of your life do you wish you could just hide away? So can you imagine, like sometimes when I think about the things I do, I can be quite honest with you actually, there's no part, I promised you I'd be honest. My temper's really bad. I don't know whether you're the same as me, like I've got a real problem with anger. And so I get so angry. Sometimes Jesus uses that anger to transform the church. But actually sometimes I really struggle with anger, and therefore my language is often not very good. Now the thing is, I stand at the front and I've got a microphone and I can perform well in terms of I can be a great Christian on stage, but behind the stage, when I'm at home, when my children are really annoying me, when my temper kicks off, and then I start to swear under my breath. I'd never swear in front of my kids, but it's what happens in my heart. So that's the stuff that causes Chad to be like a runaway slave. That I would want to go and hide in the streets of Rome and tuck myself away and hide. But actually, it's that stuff I need to start fronting up to Jesus about. I hope you guys don't mind me being that honest. And it's because it gives you permission now to be that honest in your own heart and with each other a little bit. So what would cause you to be like a runaway slave? You might want to start writing some stuff down in private. There's some stuff that just makes you want to hide away your sin. Now, this guy here, Onesimus, runs away into the streets of Rome, thinks he's going to be lost in Rome forever, just hiding away. And who does he come across? He stumbles across this guy here, Paul. It's just amazing. And so Paul helps him to become a Christian. So his life is absolutely transformed. But then we've still got a big problem left. Are you still with this? Just about following the story? I kind of get the impression you think you just about are. So this guy here has now got a big problem because he's become a Christian, and actually Paul calls him like his son. So Paul, who's respected across the whole that part of the Mediterranean, around Asia and huge parts of the world, that Paul is now saying, this guy here, the runaway slave that's worth nothing, actually he's my son. And don't forget, Paul had helped Philemon to become a Christian. So then, this is the last bit, and then I'm going to send you away to read it and work out what to do with this. So Paul then writes a letter to Philemon, a personal handwritten letter, and says, I'd like to tell you that your runaway slave has become a Christian, so I'm going to ask you to take him back. But not take him back as a slave, but take him back as like a son or a brother. So it's a bit like prodigal son, for those of you that know the prodigal son story. Now, that's going to be quite something. Because you think the 60 million slaves at risk of rebellion and revolution. And so now Paul was challenging Philemon and saying, can you accept your runaway slave back? But not as a slave, can you accept him back as a brother? Can you accept him back as a son? See what Agnes is doing on screen a minute ago? She's accepting him back like a son. That is hard, because that guy deserved nothing. This guy deserved nothing. So how on earth are you going to do that? So what I want you to do now, like, some people read the Bible in different ways, and we've got some time, so like, well, after this, there'll be just a few more minutes of me talking, not much, and then we're going to worship together and try and work some of this stuff out in worship and prayer for each other. But the way we read the Bible is different. Some of you love just kind of like hiding away, just you and the Bible, and reading. You love it. Others of you quite like to sit in a pair and maybe just sit and work out, what does this mean? Like, how does this feel? Just two of you, and read it together. Some of you quite like to sit back and listen to it being read to you, so you can kind of lay back and picture it. And I don't want to just assume that one of those is right, because you all learn in different ways. And also, you've been sitting there for a long time. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to read the whole book of Philemon, which actually isn't that much. It's only a really short book. And you could do it in one of those three ways. I'm going to suggest, if you want to read it in a pair, and it has to just be two of you, then to go next door, not yet, to go next door and just kind of get yourself down and just read it, just the two of you, and work out this passage. If you want to go and hide away, just this bit of corridor just outside, don't go too far, just sit on the sofas, just sit and read it to yourself, maybe read it two or three times, maybe dwell on a certain verse, if there's one verse that stands out. Or for those of you that have just preferred to sit and listen, Sam's going to come forward and read it from the front, and you can sit and listen to the Message version, which is really easy to kind of read and understand. I'm going to give you like kind of a maximum of say 5, 6, 7 minutes to do that in whatever way you want to do. And then we'll all come back when I call you. But here's the thing. One question for you to look at. One question. How is this possible? How is it possible that Philemon is going to welcome him back? What has happened in Paul's life? You might know a bit about Paul, and we'll do some more tomorrow. But what's happened here? What's happened on screen that makes it possible? How is it possible that Onesimus, the runaway slave, who doesn't deserve anything, now gets treated as a son or a brother? How is that possible? Go and read the book of Philemon. See what you can work out. Off you go. Come back in 6 or 7 minutes. I'll call you back. Go, go, go! Okay, so for those of you that are staying in here, Sam's just about to read from Philemon. You can just sit and listen. If you're disappearing, now is the time to disappear just for a few minutes. Not back to your bedrooms, just within earshot. Okay, off you go.
Okay, so we're going to go through from verse 10 onwards, and I'll read it twice to you guys. So while here in jail, I fathered a child, so to speak, and here he is, hand-carrying this letter, Onesimus. He was useless to you before. Now he's useless to both of us. I'm sending him back to you, but it feels like I'm cutting off my right arm in doing so. I wanted, in the worst way, to keep him here as your stand-in, to help out while I'm in jail for the message. But I don't want to do anything behind your back, make you do a good deed that you hadn't willingly agreed to, Maybe it's all for the best that you lost him for a while. You're getting him back now for good, and no mere slave this time, but a true Christian brother. That's what he was to me. He'll be even more than that to you. So if you still consider me a comrade in arms, welcome him back as you would me. If he damaged anything or owes you anything, chalk it up to my account. This is my personal signature, Paul, and I stand behind it. I don't need to remind you, do I, that you owe your very life to me. Do me this big favor, friend. You'll be doing it for Christ, but it will also do my heart good. I know you well enough to know your will. You'll probably go far beyond what I've written. And by the way, get a room ready for me. Because of your prayers, I fully expect to be your guest again. So just take a moment to just think over those words, and then I'll read it again. While here in jail, I've fathered a child, so to speak. And here he is, hand-carrying this letter, Onesimus. He was useless to you before. Now he's useful to both of us. I'm sending him back to you, but it feels like I'm cutting off my right arm in doing so. I wanted, in the worst way, to keep him here as your stand-in to help out while I'm in jail for the message. But I didn't want to do anything behind your back. Make you do a good deed that you hadn't willingly agreed to. Maybe it's all for the best that you lost him for a while. You're getting him back now for good. And no mere slave this time, but a true Christian brother. That's what he was to me. He'll be even more than that to you. So if you still consider me a comrade in arms, welcome him back as you would me. If he damaged anything or owes you anything, chalk it up to my account. This is my personal signature, Paul, and I stand behind it. I don't need to remind you, do I, that you owe your very life to me. Do me this big favor, friend. You'll be doing it for Christ, but it will also do my heart good. I know you well enough to know you will. You'll probably go far beyond what I've written. And by the way, get a room ready for me. Because of your prayers, I fully expect to be your guest again.
Okay, well, just while you're sitting there, it's just nice with a bit of space now to think and a space around you. Just, is there anything you don't understand? Kind of just chat to the person next to you. Anything you struggled with? Or anything you just loved? Is there a particular verse that stood out for you? And that question of, like, how is this possible that the runaway slave becomes a brother? Just chat to the person next to you. Just kind of work some of that stuff out before we worship, and I'll go and get the other groups back in. What do you reckon? Okay, come and join us. Great. Guys, thanks for doing that so well. You did that really nicely. It was nice. It was just total silence for those of you guys reading on your own. And really nice that you just did that in whichever way you felt comfortable. So, like, my guess is you've reached that peak of, like, probably gained quite a lot tonight in terms of, like, receiving from God. But I don't want to talk for too long, because I think God now wants to start to work in your hearts. And I don't want to talk for too long. So if I talk for more than 3 or 4 minutes, will someone just tell me to shut up? Is that all right? You can be really honest with me. So, this story is incredible. I want you to go back and read that again later on tonight. Don't just read it once. Take some of that in. The Onesimus, the runaway slave, becomes a son and a brother. And do you know what? I do not deserve to be able to talk to the King of the Universe. I do not deserve to be able to talk to God, to be able to look him in the eye when I get to heaven, to spend eternity in heaven worshipping him. I don't deserve that. When I think about some of the stuff I've done, I remember actually, before I became a Christian when I was 14, when I was 13, I'd made some mistakes. Like, I just had a bad year and I'd made some horrible mistakes. I don't know what things you've done that you regret. Maybe it's like habits you've got, or maybe it's things you just, like moments or things you've said or things you wish you could take back, some kind of regret. I remember putting like black dots in my homework diary. I didn't want to write the words down because I didn't ever want anyone to discover. So I just put black dots in my homework diary to represent the days that I'd really let God down. And you know what? That moment then, a year later, when I became a Christian at 14, I was totally wiped clean. It's like the black dots had gone. It says in Psalm 51, wash me and I'll be whiter than snow. And I think as a starting point for Into the Wild, the start of our 4 days, we start with Jesus washing us. That between us, we know there's so many things that are just so not right. The things we've done, the things we've said, the things we've thought. Like each one of us, little tiny things and big things, and the combination of all those things means that we're all like an isthmus. We all want to go and hide in Rome, just in the dark alleys, think we don't deserve anything. And then we meet grace because Jesus died on the cross. We'll talk more about that next 2 or 3 days. But that moment where Jesus is in the tomb is like in the dark place, a bit like the dark street alley, that kind of like darkness in the tomb. And then there's a moment where Jesus takes a breath. So he's been dead for 3 days. His body totally lifeless in the tomb. He's not pretending. His body's not still warm. His body was cold. His lungs were still. He was dead. And then there's a moment where the Holy Spirit clearly stirs in him. And he comes back to life and his lungs reinflate. Isn't that incredible? His lungs reinflate. And in that moment, as he steps out of the darkness of the tomb into the glorious light of day in the morning, in that moment, the black dots in my homework diary disappear and I become whiter than snow. That all the things I'd ever done wrong were nailed to the cross when Jesus died. And as he rose to glorious life, I start whiter than snow. So I start my mission. I start my adventure. I start going into the wild whiter than snow. Not because I deserve it, but because Jesus has done it for me. So girls, do you want to hold this up? Like your spot in here. So if you come to this end, that's great. Thank you for those of you that contributed to this. It's really interesting. Still a bit wet. So like the red particularly just represents so much sin. And can you see, for me, like the little tiny black dots in my homework diary? And people have covered it with words, global issues like climate change and the refugee crisis, the things and people we're letting down, but also like individual things that we've got in our lives. So people have been really honest. So for instance, where's my temper and my language? Just the word sin over and over again. So girls, will you just start to somehow, between you, peel that off? Is that okay? Can you see that under here, so in that moment when I became a Christian, this is what happened. That the black dots in my homework diary literally, physically disappeared because I was whiter than snow and ready to start my adventure with Jesus. So I want you to think, what would those things be that would cause you to be a runaway slave? What would be your black dots on here? What would be the things, the mess around you, that horrible sin that surrounds you? And then in the worship in a minute, as we worship, we stand and worship knowing that Jesus has caused us, because of his death on the cross, to be whiter than snow. Perfect, starting again. Our sin gone. The black dots disappear. And so can I encourage us to do one thing when we worship? Shall we worship like runaway slaves? Do you know what I mean? That our worship would come alive because we worship like runaway slaves. Let's worship like Onesimus. That moment where he was like, oh wow, I'm forgiven. I start again. I'm whiter than snow. I am so sorry for the things I did. And now I start again, not as a slave, but as a brother. So do you guys want to stand? Should we sing like runaway slaves as we acknowledge Jesus is right here with us?